Sojo's legs had been missing for some time now, and he scooted around the table on what had been an equipment dolly. Two handles, both of which mounted a piece of rubber, were his sole means of propulsion. He didn't want to leave the relative safety of his nest, but it was necessary. The software had to be sent, and, because large sections of the ship's comm system had been destroyed during the quakes, there was no choice but to venture outside. Sojo had traded his right leg for the holotech mini-frame. He slipped the jack into his temple, loaded the folder called Sunshine, and sent it back up to the RAM hidden in his right biceps. Once that was accomplished, the android took one last look around. The room was warm and messy, just the way he liked it. The black watch cap and chopped down parka lay in a pile against one wall. He pulled them on, found the remote, and aimed it at the low torso-sized door. The panel opened and closed as the android passed through. A yellow arrow pointed back toward his quarters. Sojo ignored it. The passageway zigzagged back and forth. Safety first, electrical access panel, and emergency air supply decals testified to a more orderly past. Wires, all of which had been stripped out of some other part of the ship, had been draped across beams and strung to feed glow rods that dangled every 20 feet. Emaciated men, women, and children, most dressed in rags, greeted the android as he rolled past, called the name they knew him by, and wished him well. And no wonder, since Sojo had helped each of them at one time or another. The man called Fags was no exception. He smiled at Sojo, waved at the android's back, and returned to his closet-sized cubicle. The comm suit was hidden beneath the flat gray-white pillow. The air was cold, and Fags could see the breath as he blew on his fingers and thumbed the power switch. A green light appeared, static hissed, and he pressed send. Fags here. The better part of a minute passed before an answer came. The voice sounded bored. Yeah, so what's up? The Crip left his cube. There was a pause, as if the other man was speaking to someone else, followed by the words Fags had been waiting for. You done good, Fags. You like ham?
I love ham.
Good. You got one coming. Fags thought about the tender pink meat spitting in a pan. Saliva filled his mouth and his stomach growled.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
You bet, the voice said. And Fags?
Yeah?
Spend the rest of the day somewhere else. It'll be safer that way. Fags hurried out into the cold. Mount Perlo had been the first to explode. Others followed. Aftershocks were so common that Fags barely noticed the one that shook the ground beneath his feet. Zool was restless. Dune felt his aggressor's systems come online as a unicycle rumbled by. Both the riders wore visored helmets. The passenger carried a Crowley IV submachine gun. Standard wear these days, assuming you had the ammo to feed one. The unicycle vanished as quickly as it had appeared. A stray radio signal bounced in from somewhere, pushed a burst of static through Channel 7, and signified nothing. He'd spent weeks looking for Sojo and acquired all sorts of trivia during that time. Sojo had functioned as one of Dr. Jean Garrison's assistants on the trip out, and Garrison, better known to artificial sentience as the Creator, had employed the synthetic's services after the landing as well. Years passed, and while Dune spent his time chasing criminals, Sojo absorbed everything Garrison was willing to teach, and then, in what the Creator called the final measure of his work, took self-directed programming to a whole new level and pursued projects that only he and his mentor could understand. Then, before whatever it was they were working on could be realized, the quakes brought everything to a halt. The humans who had been led to expect something verging on paradise had arrived only to find that Zool had been inhabited for hundreds of thousands of years, first by the Forerunners, whose ruins still dotted the surface of the planet, then by members of a religious cult that the rest of the Zid race found so repugnant that they forced the entire membership into sleep capsules and sent them to a then unpopulated planet. Though not exactly pleased about the incumbent population, which also included a colony of the beetle-like Mothri, the humans were extremely adaptable and eager to take advantage of the planet's considerable resources and wide open spaces. Unlike the other races, who avoided each other to whatever extent they could, the humans mixed with both